Does everybody remember way back in October 2017, episode 34 of the Weird World podcast, where we talked about the Heaven's Gate Doomsday Cult? Well, that was a cult, but it was also considered a UFO religion, and it began in 1974 and ended in a horrific mass suicide of 39 people in 1997. Today, we're going to talk about what is considered the very first UFO religion based in a Chicago suburb in 1954 with a very unlikely leader named Dorothy. This UFO religion led to a foundational psychological theory, and it remains core to the study of psychology today.
Welcome, everyone, to the Weird World Podcast.
I'm Carrie.
And that right across the room is Lily.
That nobody can hear.
Well, you never know. She's loud. She's been growling for a while. Carrie has something for us today that is, I think, interesting in two different ways. I know a bit about this. It's something about, as you teased, about a doomsday cult, about a UFO-related doomsday cult, but also it has a lot to say, even in modern psychology, still does. So we'll see how you tie those two things together, Carrie.
And you tend to disfavor my psychological topics.
Well, but this one has a doomsday cult focused on UFOs. thank you for knowing the name of the podcast.
Okay. Well, do you remember episode 34?
Yes, of course I do.
Are you impressed that I looked it up?
I am, because I'm pretty sure you looked it up, right?
Of course. Okay. No, I remembered. I
that would be even more impressive, but yes.
Yeah.
The Heaven's Gate episode.
Yeah, that one was terrible.
That was horrific.
Well, 1954, suburban Chicago.
Starting a timeline. I feel like this timeline is not going to be a very long one, but okay.
No, it's not.
Let's go back a little further. Tell us about the...
Dorothy?
Yeah.
Well, she was born around 1900.
What's her last name?
Martin.
There you go.
And she was like a typical 1950s housewife. Nowhere did anything say whether or not she had any children. So I'm assuming she did not have children. It probably would have come up.
You'd think.
She was married.
Although they could have been grown up and gone. She's 50. How old is she? 54.
She's 54, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they could have been.
Possibly.
I don't think they were there. Yeah.
Well, she was married. She was a stay-at-home wife. And she kind of felt like she was just living an invisible life. Hmm. She felt like she had no impact on anything. And she was becoming very disillusioned.
She needed a hobby?
She did.
So she thought cult leader was a viable option? Okay. You go right past knitting to cult leader.
I was going to say, had she never heard of crochet?
Damn it. If only she had heard of crochet, things would be different.
Well, it seems like when she was younger, she might have been a little bit more of an upstart than she was by the time she ended up in Chicago. She lived in New York for a time, and she had explored other religions. Hmm. Looking for something, I suppose.
By other, you mean other than, I'm assuming, Christian?
Yes. Okay. Nothing was very specific. What, I don't know, maybe Buddhism, who knows what was going around in the
40s, 50s?
Yeah, probably earlier than that.
Oh, okay.
I would imagine, right?
Sure.
So I'm assuming pre-marriage.
Mm. Oh, okay. So this could be in the 20s.
To whatever Mr. Martin's name was.
We'll go Frank.
For once, I love this. Dorothy has the first name.
It's just Mr. Martin.
Mr. Martin does not.
I love it.
Every day, Mr. Martin would go off to his whatever job. And she was stuck at home thinking about how pointless her life is.
Are they in Chicago now? Or Oak Park?
Suburb of Chicago? Yeah.
Okay. So his job had something to do with the meatpacking industry. I'm just going to assume that.
I don't know. The seedlings of what is about to come started in 1953.
Okay.
One day, she's home alone after Mr. Martin goes off to work, and she just kind of drifts off. Like, her mind just goes blank, and then all of a sudden she notices she has no feeling in her arm. Mm. It had felt kind of tingly, like it had fallen asleep. Pins and needles feeling
at
first.
Did she invent restless leg syndrome?
This is her arm.
Oh, her arm. She invented restless arm syndrome, something we still don't fully know about?
And then she felt something. She felt like she had gotten hit with like a sudden jolt of electricity.
Ooh.
And for some reason, she was compelled to pick up a pen. Oh. And when she did, her hand just started writing.
Automatic writing. That old foundry of cults.
It was weird. It didn't really look like her writing, but it looked kind of familiar to her. It was a little bit chicken scratchy. But apparently it was a message from her dead father.
You know that your handwriting looking different is also not a symptom, but it's associated with schizophrenia and a psychotic episode of schizophrenia, by the way.
Oh, really?
Just FYI. Yes, it is.
Oh, yikes.
I know that only because I'm researching an episode and that just came about.
Really?
That exact issue. I won't give it too much away, but a person who had history of psychotic episodes, and it involves a court case, and the prosecution is saying, oh, she had shown no signs of any kind of psychotic breakdown. She was fine at the time. And they did find letters from her from the time when this horrific thing happened. And her handwriting was weirdly different and scrawly and chicken scratchy from what it normally was. Ooh. And so they talked to doctors about, and
it's
a sign that she's having a schizophrenic breakdown.
Wow.
So I'm not saying that Dorothy was having a mental breakdown, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, so, but this writing, it was a message from her dead father. And it was not quite as earth-shattering as one might expect. He wanted her to ask her mother to plant flowers in the spring.
I never have any flowers in my grave. I'm obviously hanging around my grave. Did he get a name? Or was he just a Mr. whatever her maiden name was?
No, I don't even know what her maiden name was.
Damn.
Dead father.
Okay, dead father. All right.
Dorothy was super excited because she kind of had managed to do something pretty spectacular, right? She channeled the spirit of her dead father.
Yeah. So she could have easily been, there's other avenues at this point for her to you know, if channeling was a thing back then, she could have
become a medium,
a fake psychic. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean fake?
I mean a real psychic, a psychic medium.
She immediately went to tell her mother about the message, and her mother was not impressed. She thought Dorothy was playing a cruel joke on her and told her, knock it off. I don't want to hear any more messages from my dead husband.
He hated flowers. What are you talking about? No, it sounds nothing like dead father.
Well, despite her mother's underwhelming response to Dorothy's good news, she was super excited about it. She felt she was finally going to find her purpose in life and that now she knew how it happened. She had to keep her mind blank and open, and then she'd be able to channel her father again.
She thought just her father. She wasn't thinking big and thinking any dead person.
Well, not yet, I guess, you know.
Huh. Probably I would be thinking.
She had to learn how to do it.
That's
true. She's going to test it.
She's new.
Yeah. You got to learn your.
She's got to train.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to learn how to use your powers. Mm-hmm. So she received a few more messages from her father. They were the same kinds of, you know, mundane messages, nothing profound or earth shattering.
A second symptom of a severe mental breakdown, by the way, but okay.
Hey, leave Dorothy alone for now.
Okay.
So her mom, like I said, didn't want to hear about it. Her husband just pretty much ignored her. She told him about all of this stuff, he wasn't mean about it. But he didn't really believe that she was really channeling her father's spirit.
Sounds great, honey. Is the steak ready or not? I'm starving for my hours and hours and hours of meat packing.
I think he thought it was an expression of her grief because her father hadn't been dead that long.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's what he thought. So he wasn't going to, you know, be overly.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah. Mr. Martin did seem like a nice guy.
Mr. Martin. Although you could also suggest therapy.
It's 1954, Dean. He kind of just fades into the background for the rest of the story. Dorothy.
Her crazy friends are over again. I'm going to go through the bar.
So Dorothy apparently learns how to, blank out her mind and then open it up. So then she starts to get messages from another spirit, not just her dad. Shockingly, since her dad's messages didn't receive a very warm reception.
Tell your mother she's a bitch.
This spirit wants to be known as Elder Brother.
Oh. So no one gets a name, even though this person could have theoretically had a name?
Okay. I mean, I guess that's his name, elder brother.
It's probably not. So dead husband and, I mean, dead father and elder brother.
Okay. Yeah. He claimed to be a higher being from Venus.
Okay.
So he's not a dead spirit.
No.
He's from Venus.
And we now know Venus is absolutely habitable to any kind of life whatsoever at 800 degrees Celsius. But okay, that's fine.
Well, he's a higher being. Okay. I don't think he lives there corporeally.
In 1954, in fact, not even that long ago, we still thought, because Venus is the closest planet in terms of size and just, you know, from afar, from a distance. And by 1954, we still didn't know both Venus and Mars, but there more people thought that Venus was a possible holder of life than anything. We had no idea how you know, crushingly hot it was and how it's filled with, its atmosphere is just horrific poisonous gas. We didn't know that yet. So there were a lot of these cults talked about Venusians.
Really?
That went away, I think, in the 70s when they had flybys and they said, oh, no, nothing ever could live there.
Yeah. Didn't I Love Lucy have a thing with Venusians?
I think they did. Think, yeah. It was probably almost as popular as Martians. I mean,
yeah, that's
it.
Funny.
Was the Martian Chronicles. So that was the other one. But whether life was on Venus and Mars was kind of 50-50, but both were thought to be habitable.
Yeah.
And we, you know, Mars, very unlikely. Venus, absolutely impossible. But not in 1954. We didn't know that.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, I think, you know, when she was dabbling in religions and, you know, trying to find something, I guess, better than Christianity, I think she did for a time become a Scientologist. Mm. And I don't know if she was.
Wait.
At this time.
That's not going to work.
Scientology wasn't around?
Gosh, I could have sworn it was in the mid-50s that he started it up. I don't think 54.
Yeah, I wasn't
sure. I'd have to look it up, but if she was one of the first
ones. At the very beginning.
Yeah.
Which would seem weird because where did they start?
I think he was LA, wasn't he?
That's what I thought too.
He was a science fiction writer.
Yeah.
Very bad science fiction writer, L. Ron Hubbard, at this time still, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong. It could have been.
Yeah. I don't know.
Early stages by that point.
It was only in one source. So that's why it wasn't a main thing in my notes, but it just occurred to me, oh yeah, there was that Scientology reference. So who knows? Because they do other planets and aliens,
they do.
Right.
They have a whole thing is there's a big sci-fi. I'm not going to say it was a science fiction novelist.
Right.
He basically wrote a science fiction story and said, no, that's all true. It's my religion.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe not, take it with a grain of salt. So where were we? Elder brother. He was a higher being from Venus, and he told her he was going to help strengthen her connection with her father.
Oh. It's all back to him again. She has some daddy issues, I feel
but
like.
But before long, he changed his focus because Dorothy's father was unreliable and too concerned with, quote, earthly pursuits.
What does that mean?
As a dead spirit?
Was
but
he
whatever.
Trying to get lewd? Dorothy, introduce me to some ladies. Do you have any friends? You're dead, Dad. Still, I'm lonely. I just looked it up, and Dianetics was written already, but as a religion, it was right around 54-ish that he started propounding Scientology as a religion. So I don't think she was heading.
So unless he was doing it in Chicago, then. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Somebody probably just made the connection between, you know, religion and
I mean, I'm not 100%, but unlikely.
Okay. She doesn't speak about it
a
lot, so probably not. But so anyway.
She was busy doing her own religion.
She was.
Okay.
So Dorothy stops getting messages from her father altogether.
Oh, they had a falling out with her father after he died. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's not common.
It's because of elder brother. Said he was unreliable.
Goddamn Venusian.
So by April 1954, then Dorothy began channeling information from another being. So I'm assuming she stops hearing from elder brother.
Wow.
She stopped hearing from her dad.
Very reliable, are they?
Well, this person calls themselves Sananda.
Sananda. You have to spell that.
S-A-N. Okay. A-N-D-A.
Sananda. I like that.
Which is funny because...
Oh, it's a classic made-up science fiction ridiculous name. We hail from Sananda, afar off. Well, yeah, we are Sanandans.
That's the name.
I know, but still, you can see it being a Star Wars planet.
It's funny because I know of a person named Sananda.
Sananda.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I don't know what.
Is it spelled the same?
No, it's with an O.
Okay. Sananda. Okay.
I think.
She's talking to Sananda now.
So I have to be very careful to say Sananda and not Sananda.
Okay. How do you know it's pronounced Sananda? Maybe it is pronounced Sananda.
Well, because that's the way I heard it pronounced.
Oh, okay.
And it's also, well, yeah, A's could be A's, but it was said like Sananda.
Got
so
it.
I'm assuming. So Sananda is an alien incarnation of Jesus.
Oh, an alien Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Like another Jesus on a multiverse kind of a thing, or just a different Jesus?
From a different planet.
Different planet. So it could be like a multiverse thing.
You want to know?
Or is it the same universe, just so this is a Jesus, like the Jesus of the planet, like he's like Jesus, or he's literally Jesus just from a different planet?
I don't know.
Hmm.
It's the alien incarnation of Jesus. That's what I've got.
Okay. Okay. There's different things that could be, but go ahead.
From the planet Clarion.
Clarion, which I believe has to do with allergies, I think. All those people have terrible allergies on that planet. There's a lot of pollen on Clarion.
Which, as far as I know, is a fictional planet.
No, of course it is. These are two classic 1950s space names.
So, through Sananda.
From Clarion. No, who?
From Clarion.
Wait, Sananda's from Clarion. So, Sananda is, right. Sananda is alien Jesus from Clarion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, through Sananda, Dorothy finds out that she has been chosen to be a messenger for the beings like Sananda.
Oh.
He's not a lone entity.
Okay.
And she calls them the Guardians. I don't know if she gets that from Sananda or if she made that up.
I feel like B. But you know what? It could be either way.
Yeah, you never know. She claimed that
the Cleveland Guardians? She was in Chicago.
She's in Chicago.
Huh. I wonder if that's where the Cleveland Guardians got their name. Let's assume it is. Go ahead.
Isn't that a new name?
Yes, it
is. So she claimed that they would bring cosmic intelligence to the rest of the Earth.
Nice.
I guess the rest meaning all the non-Dorothys, because she's already got it.
She has to. Everyone but me. I'm already smart.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So, as we might imagine, she's looking for a purpose and something in her life. So gives her intense feeling of importance and purpose.
Absolutely. I mean, you are chosen by the Guardians
by the
of all people.
Jesus.
Those guys don't choose anyone. There's a very, very, very severe vetting process for those guys. It's more than when you're looking for a vice president.
She felt empowered, but she wasn't about to talk about her new mission in life, as you know, especially around her husband and her mother.
Well, she'd already told both of them, though, that she was talking to dead people.
Yeah.
Right? Her father, at least.
Yeah.
She had not told them about even elder brother, let alone Sananda?
I don't know.
Okay.
She kind of kept it to herself on the down low.
So one thing when you talk to a dead human, when you start talking to aliens, it's a little weirder, isn't it?
But in Chicago, she had been going to New Age events as they came up in her area. I wasn't aware of a big New Age movement beginning that early.
A lot of that stuff goes back much further than we think it is.
And she was, you know, probably on the lookout for someone at these New Agey events who would be receptive to her new message. Mm-hmm. And I think she was looking for a group that would take her seriously.
Carrie, she's looking for a cult. She's got the message. She's been chosen. The Guardians are backing her up. She needs some people.
She's looking for fellowship. Well, in March 1954, a doctor named Charles Lawhead, which is interesting because it is spelled Laughead.
Laughead.
L-A-U-G-H. So like laugh.
Yeah.
E-A-D.
Okay.
But it's, what did I say? Lawhead.
It's Lawhead, please. Like, I'm a lawyer with a head.
I was calling him Laughead. But so anyway, he was a doctor, a physician who worked at Michigan State College. He somehow got wind of Dorothy and her alien friend, Sananda, and was pretty interested in it. He's a little bit younger. He's about 10 years younger than her. He is married, and he and his wife Lillian had been Christian missionaries in the 1940s, traveling around the world. And they had spent a few years in Egypt, where Charles' wife Lillian began having extremely strange nightmares. And they were so bothersome that her nightmares led them to look into esoteric occult ideas, searching for a cure.
Curious, for her fears. The most popular thing in the world today. You still have millions of people on YouTube and everything, you know, developing these non-medical cures for, and you know, bad-mouthing actual medicine all the time. So,
I mean, I don't...
It's a great way to make some cash.
I'm not sure there's medicine for nightmares. I don't know what her nightmares were about. They were strange, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're looking for help. They're looking for anything, you know. And if the guardians are as powerful as they sound like, why not try them?
But they're Christian missionaries, so one would be led to believe they're devout Christians. Mm-hmm. So the wife has nightmares, so they start looking into a cult.
A little weird.
Yeah, very weird. One might say they weren't very devout Christians. Anyway.
He's like whispering at you. I'm not accusing anything. I'm not casting aspersions.
They weren't very devout Christians because this led them to turn away from their traditional Protestant beliefs. Okay. And they went back to the United States, and Charles started looking into alternative spiritual ideas.
Okay. To help, still to help his wife with her nightmares?
I think to replace their Protestantism, okay. probably. Because, okay. I mean, clearly it took a big part of their life. Yeah. So they needed
Being Protestant missionaries didn't stop his wife from having terrible nightmares. So he figured I should do something else. Just join a different religion.
So by the early 1950s, he had become very interested in the idea of flying saucers and visitors from outer space.
Yes, this is the mid-50s. We forget that now. This is the golden age of the idea of flying saucers, aliens.
Yeah.
Again, we thought they could be. It didn't. These days, the distance is maybe the most daunting thing about belief in aliens on Earth because it's light years from anything. At the time, they could be from Mars, they could be from Venus. It's not a problem. You know, it's conceiving that something can be from there. Or Jupiter. You hear about that too sometimes.
Or the moon. Anywhere. We thought people lived on the moon too.
So there were tons of people who believed in this. I mean, I shouldn't know. I don't want to overstate it. It was still a very, very, very marginalized, tiny little niche audience, but they're very active at this time.
Apparently, he literally traveled across the country looking for answers and people who were believers like he was. You might think being a medical doctor would occupy his time, but I guess not.
No, he's got plenty.
I'm not sure what Lillian was doing, how they were paying the bills, but this search led him to Dorothy Martin.
Okay, where were they from again?
Michigan.
Back to okay.
Did I say Michigan?
You said Michigan State, so yeah.
Yeah,
so
Michigan State,
Lansing or East Lansing. Okay.
He met Dorothy in June of 1954. She told him about Sananda and how she could channel him and receive messages from the planet Clarion. And not shockingly, Charles was very interested. I'm assuming they met at some New Age event.
Probably.
That Dorothy was
Yeah, so Dorothy's going to these New Age events and going, oh, by the way, I do speak to a guardian. I'm not name dropping, but Sananda, perhaps you've heard of him.
Well, back in Charles's life in Michigan, working for Michigan State, he led a small group of college-aged people, I'm assuming meaning college students.
Yes, probably. That's a fair assumption.
They called him college-aged adults.
Well, maybe a few had dropped out by then.
Maybe. This group called themselves the Seekers. Mm. There were about a dozen of them, and they would meet weekly in a local Protestant church. And they're discussing things like morality, philosophy, and metaphysics. I imagine they were pretty insufferable. But after he met Dorothy, Charles went back to his little group of followers, the Seekers, and told them about her and her messages from Sananda. They too quickly believed in Dorothy, and they were wholeheartedly sure that she had the ability to channel unearthly beings.
She must. I mean, just from her background, it doesn't sound like she's sort of charismatic or this forceful personality, but she must have come up as just utterly convinced of this. And honestly, it sounds like she really was. This doesn't sound like someone who's making it up. This is someone who really believed these voices were telling these things. And she came across as just so certain and convinced and genuine that people just said, God, you know, they're obviously you have to be predisposed or ready to believe something like that, believe something like that. But it doesn't sound like you think of Jim Jones as some really outlandish personality. She doesn't sound like that at all.
No, not at all.
She's a different kind of cult leader. I kind of like it.
Yeah. And I do think she fully believed everything she was saying.
It sounds like it.
I mean, which leads you to wonder, what are these messages that she's receiving? She's not making...
I think I know where they're from.
Me too. But yeah, she's not making them up. Yeah. But yeah, so she's hearing them somehow.
Yes.
So Charles and Dorothy stay in touch. They communicate often. It's been very pointedly made clear that it's not romantic.
They weren't getting it
all. No. It's purely platonic. It's
spiritual.
Spiritual. And eventually, Dorothy would reveal some of the more disturbing revelations
it's gonna get
she'd
dark.
Been getting from Sananda.
Did she invent the phrase, "I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual"? Because if so,
no,
she's a monster.
By spring of 1950, I'm not going to tell you what the disturbing revelations are yet.
Oh, you're not?
Okay. No.
By spring
of 1954, Charles and his group of a dozen or so seekers and a handful of followers that Dorothy had managed to pick up along her way,
merge.
They would all get together and to listen to Dorothy speak about the guardians and their messages. Up until this point, you know, the messages had been pretty vague. Mm-hmm. But now that she's got a little bit of a following, this is when the messages start to get a little bit darker.
Mad. I hope not.
In May, Sananda tells Dorothy that a bunch of beings from outer space would be coming to Earth soon and that there was going to be a big war that would result in the death of much of humanity.
Whoa. Did that happen?
Sananda, not super specific about the exact dates or anything. So, you know, Dorothy and her followers, not super concerned yet. Okay. It's just, you know, vague, you know, apocalyptic war.
Yeah, just giving you a heads up.
Alien war in the
future.
Not
going to tell you when, not going to tell you how, but heads up, almost everyone's going to die.
They're not going to worry till they get the specifics.
Back to the original program.
So that was May.
Okay.
On July 23rd, 1954, Dorothy gets a very important message from the Guardians. This time, they give her a specific date. It's going to be August 1st.
August? Oh, wow. So they let her know
a week ahead.
Oh,
yep.
My God.
A spaceship is going to land at a nearby airbase, and Dorothy surmises this is probably going to be the beginning of this alien invasion, right?
A spaceship needs to land at an airbase for some reason, but okay.
Yeah. So Dorothy did not immediately reveal this news, maybe because she didn't want to panic the seekers or other people, or maybe to save herself the embarrassment if it didn't happen. But she did tell Charles. And even though
Dr. Lawhead.
Is that what I said it was? Lawhead. So she told Charles, but she said, hey,
keeping the down.
Keep quiet, just between you and me.
Don't tell the youngins. Yep. I think they might panic.
Yep. Charles, however, could not keep this very important news to himself. So,
if you have one job being number two, Charles,
I know.
Keep a secret.
He tells just a few of the other seekers. And then on the day, August 1st, Dorothy let 12 of her followers go with her to the airfield, assuming some of them knew, some of them didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They were thrilled.
Yeah, for like, where are we going? You'll see when we get there.
It's a surprise.
Is it a great surprise? Not really, no. It's actually horrific, but just shut up and come on.
Well, they're super excited. And Charles and his wife Lillian were part of the group. As they drove the small roads leading out to this airfield, they're, you know, getting more and more exciting. They must have ended up telling everybody. They're looking for a good place from which to view the landing. You know, they don't want to be right there, but they want to have a good view. And they're also looking up in the sky for any signs of UFOs. They didn't know how many or, you know, what they were going to look like.
Do you really want to be that proximate to the thing that's going to cause the destruction of most of humankind? Or should you get the hell as far away? We're going to Tahiti, everyone. Let's go.
Well, they think they're on the good side of the aliens.
Yeah, but there's going to be a war. So the Guardians must have enemies, or the Guardians, you know, the side the Guardians is on must have enemies. So I don't know. They're getting close to the front line here.
I'm assuming the war is going to be against
humankind.
Yeah.
Well, then that means she's taking the side of the alien conquerors of our planet. Not cool, Dorothy.
Yeah. Well, after a few hours of no sign of any spacecraft landing, they decide, let's take a break for lunch.
Okay. I don't see anything, but thank God we brought picnic fixings.
So while they're breaking for lunch, a mysterious man slowly approaches them. Oh. And he seemed to just come from nowhere. He just appeared. They didn't see where he came from.
He says, what the hell you doing on airfield space, people? And is that cornbread? Because I would love a slice.
He didn't actually say much, but Dorothy felt oddly drawn to him.
Oh.
So
now is it going to get sexy? Should I play the porn music?
She went to the car to get him some watermelon.
Okay.
Because, he probably looked hungry and thirsty.
Yeah. And watermelon, you know what? Can both those things.
Yeah. So when she turns around with the watermelon, he disappeared.
No. Did anybody else see him besides Dorothy?
I think so, because it said he approached the group.
Okay.
So anyway, they, that guy's gone. And as evening approached, they, finally decided, well, no spaceship is coming. So they turned around and went home very disappointed.
Maybe the Guardians use a different calendar. Maybe they use the Gregorian or the Julian calendar, perhaps something like that. So they could have got their calendar mixed up as opposed to the actually not knowing when the invasion is occurring.
Well, there's probably going to be an explanation for this. Yeah. The next day, Dorothy gets a message from Sananda telling her.
I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed.
It was him.
Oh.
He was the mysterious man in the airfield.
And did he get the water? He goes, by the way, the watermelon looked delicious. I'm allergic.
He had disguised himself
as a
human man.
Okay.
But he just didn't bother to wait to get some watermelon. So this news was a big relief to the group and helped alleviate their disappointment in the failure of Dorothy's last prediction. And actually now they had more faith in her than ever before.
Okay.
Did Sananda
explain why he gave him the wrong date?
No.
Okay.
But, probably the usual.
It's a testing.
Test. Yeah, it's a test.
That's the, okay.
Yeah. At this point, it seems like, Dorothy might just be a con artist, right?
No.
Although she hasn't asked for anybody to give her money or anything like that. But
she did get them to make all the fixings for a picnic, though, including some delicious
watermelon.
Yeah,
that's true. So, okay. But, when her prediction doesn't come true, did she really receive this message from Sananda, or is she just telling her followers what they want to hear or what they need to hear so they'll continue believing in her? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
So that guy who asked for directions or why they were on the land turned into Sananda. That's clever.
Maybe.
Nice.
But it seemed to everybody like she truly did believe in the messages too, like we said.
Yeah.
And she believed her being chosen as the messenger for the Guardians was the greatest gift, and it's what gave her life meaning.
Okay.
So she was all in this thing.
At this point, you probably should be.
The Seekers, they all live in Michigan.
Yeah.
They kept coming from Michigan to Chicago area to Dorothy's house to hear about latest messages. How far is that? I meant to look it up. But
it's not super far. It's probably a few hours drive.
Yeah. Well, so they kept coming to, they were sitting on the edge of their seat, finding out what the new news from Sananda and the Guardians was. Mm-hmm. So then a few weeks later on August 27th, Sananda tells Dorothy that the ancient sunken civilization of Mu.
Oh, Mu. Okay.
Was going to rise from the ocean. What happens when ancient sunken civilizations rise?
Usually all hell breaks loose.
Yes. It's going to cause massive flooding and kill millions or billions.
Wow. She could have lightened up on her predictions maybe a little bit. Did anyone know why the war didn't happen? And she just moves on to Mu rising? It's a very different apocalypse scenario.
I know. Well.
And by the way, a landmass rising in the ocean would not kill millions and millions of people, I don't think. I don't know.
But according to Sananda, it's not all bad news.
Oh.
Because he promised Dorothy that he and the Guardians would send down a spaceship to pick up Dorothy and her followers before this happened. So they would be saved.
That's convenient, but a little selfish.
Of Dorothy?
Of all of them.
Yeah.
Really. We're going to let everyone else die. Are they telling people? Are they making a big announcement? You're probably not going to believe us, but we thought we should tell you. Moo is rising. Most of you are going to drown.
Well, we'll see what happens. But unfortunately, Sananda doesn't give Dorothy the exact date. She doesn't know.
He's not good at details.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to publicize your prophecy if you don't know when this is going to happen. Yeah. You can't just say, sometime. I don't know when. So the Seekers...
We could, but it'd be less impactful.
It'd be way less effective. Yeah, so the Seekers...
It'd be the Bible, which basically said, sometime.
Yeah.
It's clearly they meant in Jesus, in the lifetime of the people listening to Jesus when he said that. So you have Christians still talking about the second coming, even though it's over 2,000 years too late, but that's fine.
Well, the Seekers are kind of nervous, going into their future is now pretty uncertain.
Yeah.
They know it's going to happen, but they don't know when.
But they feel pretty confident that spaceship is going to come together.
Well, it didn't come the first time, so I could see why they might be a little uncertain.
That's true. But Sananda came and looked after
Maybe that. It's going to get lost.
Okay.
So even though this cataclysmic event would result in millions of deaths, Dorothy didn't want to warn other people. She was worried, like we said, that it might not happen, just like the spaceship landing in the airfield didn't happen. Charles Lawhead, however, felt strongly that they needed to get the word out. It was just too important, even if they didn't have all the details yet. He didn't know about Dorothy's reservations about publicizing this flood, or maybe he didn't care.
He cared.
But he decided he was going to spread the word himself.
He's going to mansplain the end of the world is what he's going to do.
So on August 30th, and Lillian is all in with Charles. She sounds like she's a good partner. She's going along with whatever Charles says.
They're like gossiping behind Dorothy's back. She's such a guy. She's trying to tell people. She doesn't believe enough. Strong. She started a cult, Lillian. I mean, let's give her that.
Maybe Dorothy cured Lillian's scary nightmares.
I think she probably did.
So anyway, on August 30th, Charles and Lillian printed 50 pamphlets detailing Dorothy's prophecy.
50?
50.
Don't go nuts, guys.
Well, they're not sending them to people. They're sending them to dozens of newspapers and magazines.
Okay. They're sure to print them in full.
Uh-huh.
Pamphlets? Not like a flyer, but a pamphlet?
Well, a pamphlet can be like a trifold little,
I feel like it's going to be longer than that. Anytime you have manifestos from these people, they tend to be a little long.
Yeah. Well, not surprisingly, nobody published the story.
Yeah.
So a few weeks later, he tried again, but this time...
Nowadays, everyone
I know
published the story, but...
This time he included his name.
Charles did.
And what he did.
Yeah,
Dr. Charles.
Yeah, that was probably a mistake.
Lawhead from the Michigan State, whatever.
When the folks in Michigan State find out about that, maybe not a good call.
So, he probably thought, I need to give this a little bit of credibility. So, after this time, three small local papers ran the story in one of their back pages.
In central Michigan.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know where. I don't know how far, but yeah. It didn't gain any traction this time either. Three stories didn't
three
really...
Three obscure small town central Michigan newspapers.
So that's August. So that's probably going on in September when they are publishing these three little small stories. Then in early October, the University of Minnesota Psychology Department heard about Dorothy and her predictions. And a group of psychologists were interested in studying a group who appeared to believe in a prediction of a catastrophe that would occur in the near future. This group was led by a researcher named Leon Festinger. They sent several staff members to infiltrate the Seekers.
Infiltrate?
Uh-huh. And pose as believers.
Really?
They hired a few extra observers to help. And they just, kind of silently hung around and observed the Seekers.
They were academic moles.
Yep.
That would absolutely not be allowed these days.
And they're, kind of recording what they did. I'm basically writing things down.
Yeah.
Not literally. I don't think they had video and audio. They'd have their film cameras out there.
Just speaking to my flower on my lapel.
So
why is that bulge in your jacket? Nothing.
They finally get a specific date for the apocalypse now. It's going to be December 21st, 1954.
December 21st.
Just a few months away.
Okay.
Dorothy wasn't panicked. She was shying away from proselytizing. She was afraid that speaking about the Guardians might jinx it.
Jinx it.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, she's not so your she's typical not cult
one.
Leader.
Yeah, she's not the one saying it's the end of the world. Buy these white robes, these ascension robes, yeah. like the Millerites
that oh,
became
yeah.
the Seventh Day Adventist. And he sold a lot of robes, by the way. He made some good money.
Yeah.
So she's not doing that. She's actually trying to keep it on the down low. It's that damn Charles Lochhead who keeps on blabbing.
But occasionally she would talk to people who would come to her door asking questions about the predictions, because some people did read the news stories.
Okay.
And apparently local school children who heard about the weird lady predicting the end of the world would show up at her door asking her questions and wanting to talk about it, or, you know, probably just sneer at her too. Who knows? Eventually, you know, these kids have parents and they find out, they got upset and they reported her to the police.
What?
However,
she's just telling the truth, and she gave him cornbread.
The police said she hasn't really broken any laws. No. She's allowed to talk about whatever she wants to.
She's just
so.
Saying crazy shit. Is there a law against saying crazy shit? God, I wish there was.
Nope. So there was really nothing that could be done against her. So I'm sure these parents, though, forbade their children from going to the weird lady's house anymore.
Yeah.
Charles, however, got into a little more trouble. Not with the police,
MSU.
But with his employer.
Yeah.
They said they didn't really care about his strange beliefs, mm-mm. but they did object to him forcing them on his students.
Oh, he was talking about in class.
And they had gotten some complaints.
Oh, yeah.
So they asked him to resign. He claims they fired him. Mm. Potato,
yeah.
tomato. Doesn't really matter.
Okay.
He
Sananda.
There you go.
Let's call the whole thing off.
He thought him losing his job was just a part of the whole cosmic plan. And anyway, he was going to need his job after December 21st.
It's true. They had enough savings to last a couple of months.
Yep.
Okay. 3 months, maybe.
So Charles thought they needed to focus on the prophecy. So he stopped letting new members into the group. They had to cut it off. 15.
Yeah,
there's 15 members.
We're getting big. We're getting some organization here. We need an HR. We're going to have to do some of those. We're going to have some metrics to measure performance.
But those 15, they're getting increasingly excited and kind of nervous about maybe they're going to get left behind.
Oh, come on. The spaceships are going to hold plenty more than 15.
Well,
is that what the Jehovah's Witnesses are not supposed to have more than 144,000? Yeah. They have like 4 million members or something like that. So were they worried about that? Is that part of the reason why?
I don't know.
Like, they can't take everyone, so we better just shut up about it?
I don't know.
All right.
But they don't shut up about it. It's in their literature.
Yeah, but like you said, at least Dorothy's not. They're not. It doesn't sound like they're espousing it that much, and they've cut off membership. So it's not very culty.
No. Yeah.
Most of the time, those people are looking for as many members as they can.
Yeah, that's true. But usually it's because it is some kind of con, and either want to have sex with all the women or they
decide
want
who gets married to who.
All their money and belongings.
Yes.
Well, speaking of which, several of the members quit their jobs, leave their families, and all their possessions, and, you know, come to Dorothy's and basically move in with her and pretty much spend all of their time at Dorothy's house.
Okay. At this point, Mr. Martin should be talking. Okay. Seriously?
I know.
Come on, man.
You would think there would be some talk about what Mr. Martin is doing.
15 people cannot live at our house.
He's still there.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's still there. He's still around.
He's not a member of...
No.
Is among the 15 or some of those University of Minnesota infiltrators?
They must be.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
So they went to live there? Imagine you're like a college student. Yeah, I'll do that for credit.
I don't think they were all living there.
Okay.
Several of them did, but not all of them.
Okay.
Some of them probably live nearby.
Okay.
So let me see.
I mean, you would want to be near where the spaceship's going to come when the world is going to end,
yes,
for sure. So
you would really need to be. So, and they basically were ignoring the rest of the world, and they were spending their time anticipating how they were going to spend the rest of their lives on another planet. Because
Do you think they have chocolate? I love chocolate. I'm going to miss chocolate, but I don't know. They better have cornbread and watermelon. I bet they have watermelon. Maybe they don't have watermelon. That's why Sananda didn't eat watermelon. He hates watermelon. God, I'm going to eat watermelon.
I was thinking he probably doesn't need to eat, right? He's not really a human. So, like, I don't know what to do with that strange thing she's getting out of the car. I better disappear.
If you're an alien, even though you eat, a watermelon would look pretty weird.
Yeah.
It's weird, just funky colors, green on the outside, red on the inside. It's got little black dots all over it. I get it.
So Dorothy's still receiving messages. By the middle of December, the Seekers were making their preparations. Dorothy told them they had to discard any metal items.
Oh, that's weird.
That they had.
It's going to be x-rays?
No, because it would superheat when they got aboard the spaceship.
Not sure how she knows that, but okay. So, well, I guess Ananda told her.
So I'm guessing it might burn them.
Okay.
So they spent their time removing zippers and buttons and buckles and anything that was metal on their clothing. So what are they doing? Holding their pants up with rope ties or something?
Maybe.
Probably.
No zipper. Let it hang out. Okay.
So, I mean, just go by.
Yeah. Do you have any non-zippered clothing, please?
Pull up pants with an elastic waist.
Yeah. Everybody's got this is all just wear sweats.
December 16th.
They didn't have Nike shoes, did they?
No.
Okay.
Reporters. I know. I thought about that when you said sweats. On December 16th, reporters started showing up and hanging out around the outside of Dorothy's house. After Charles was fired, the newspapers picked up the story of the university doctor who was fired for participating in a doomsday cult. So that's kind of how the news started building up and getting attention. So now he's not so sure he likes all of this attention. Charles and Dorothy did not trust the media. Charles started this, so it's kind of his fault.
Maybe you shouldn't have told those three obscure Central Michigan newspapers, Charles.
Yeah, right? It didn't seem like they cared about notifying the rest of the public about the upcoming flood. They were just kind of focusing on probably the weirdness of Charles and Dorothy. And
I mean, let's write this story, but just to be safe, let's warn people about the possible flood. It's not a high probability, but it might flood. Moo might rise.
Local teenagers showed up making claims about the Guardians. Not sure what these claims were. They were essentially trying to prank Dorothy, but Dorothy wasn't really getting that they were pranking her.
Oh.
And she didn't really know what to believe, but she wanted to believe everything about the Guardians. So, like, maybe she wasn't the only one that
she
they were talking to.
Pretty sincere.
Yeah.
What? You talked to the Guardians too? What did they say? I mean, that's not usually the response of a cult leader who is tricking people.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. You blasphemer. No one talks to the special voice but me. That's a typical cult leader would be like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And she didn't do that. On December 17th, she got a phone call from, I'm assuming it was a boy or a young man. It said a young voice that said he was Captain Video.
Captain Video. I love that name.
Captain Video was a sci-fi TV character at the time.
Okay.
So he told her that the Seekers should go out into the backyard at 4 o'clock that day, December 17th, and then hung up. She thought Captain Video must be one of the Guardians.
As you will.
I'm guessing she didn't watch whatever channel Captain Video was on.
No.
And she told the Seekers that just before 4 o'clock, they need to go outside into the backyard. So they all bundle up because it's the middle of December.
And did she tell the others about this, the younger people? Because they could have known about it. It's probably
about Captain Video.
Yeah, it's saying, hey, you guys, Yakko, Wacko, and Dot just called me. And they say, and they start laughing. It's like, wait. Who told you this? So did she tell who talked to her? And did she give them the name? Do you know?
I don't know if she did or not. She might have just said the Guardians.
Okay. All right.
Contacted me because they believed every message. Yeah. Well, they're out there all, you know, in their parkas looking around.
Yeah.
4 o'clock comes and goes and nothing happens. Dorothy assumes that it was a drill. It was set up by the Guardians to test their readiness and willingness to follow orders. So good job, guys.
Yeah.
We passed the test.
We went outside.
Again.
It was really good. We put on jackets. We went outside because Yakko, Wakko, and Dot told us to. Good job.
That night, she got another message from Sananda that she relays to the Seekers. This happens miraculously every time one of Dorothy's predictions failed.
Yeah.
It was easier for the Seekers to justify the failure than believe that their faith in Dorothy was misplaced. So
wait,
whatever she says.
If there's some, okay, it's their fault. Are they going to try and blame Dorothy?
Uh-uh.
Okay, then. Sound like it.
No. So they justify it based on whatever Dorothy comes and says. Oh, the messenger said it was a drill. The messenger said, you know, it was a test.
The messengers, okay.
So then around midnight on the 17th, that same night, they go back outside again because Dorothy told them to. That was the next message that she got. And again, no spaceship comes. Another failure.
So the first one was from Captain Video, but the second one was her. Well, it was a message that she got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did she really get a call from Captain Video? What if the call was, you know, coming from inside the house? I mean, right?
I think it was just a prank call.
Okay.
From some kid.
I do too.
Yeah.
And she, that's weird. So the pranker made them A, go out at 4 p.m. and then B, this cult leader kind of subsumes that and runs with it and has another false alarm at midnight.
That's
one of the greatest pranks of all time.
I know. I wonder if they were watching. Maybe it was a neighbor kid. But for the next 2 days, the Seekers waited for the UFOs to touch ground while Dorothy starts proselytizing to the growing group of looky-loos as something outside of her house. Some followers were probably silently questioning their belief in Dorothy by this point. But, of course, as you might expect, others were doubling down. On December 20th, they gathered in Dorothy's kitchen because at midnight, it's going to be December 21st, right?
And they didn't specify a time, though.
Well, Dorothy gets another message that the spaceship is going to arrive right at midnight to collect them.
Okay.
This time for sure.
Yeah.
All the other times were tests. Okay. This time it's going to happen. Be ready at midnight.
Okay.
They're not going outside, though. They're staying in the kitchen where it's nice and warm.
It's warm. They're making cornbread.
So they sit there nervously looking at the clock, looking out the windows to see as the clock ticks down to midnight. Midnight comes and goes. No spaceship lands. No flood waters.
Terrible news for her. I'm acting like I'm surprised. I thought there might have been a flood. Moon might have 1954. We don't know.
As the sun starts to rise, the true believers are still there, still clinging to their belief in Dorothy and their hopes for salvation by the guardians. Clearly there's no flood. Dorothy again gets another message. This time, great news, guys.
I called it off.
The Guardians decided to spare the Earth for now.
Wait, so the Guardians were causing Mu to rise? And now they're not going to... Oh, we're planning to cause Mu to rise. That's implied.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And they wanted to give the Seekers, Dorothy and the Seekers, more time to grow their audience. They said that the group had spread so much light that God had saved the world from destruction.
They had 15 followers. Let's calm down. That's not a humble but they brag. Still,
their light was spreading. Okay. I don't know. Needed to spread it more.
Yeah, neighbor kids were making fun of them openly. So I don't know how much light is actually spreading.
Yeah. Well, the media is now extremely interested in the story. And they keep calling and just coming to her house, knocking on the door. They want to interview Dorothy and Charles. Dorothy likes the attention. And she really wants to share her messages with the world because... That's what they're giving her more time to do. Okay. After about 2 days, the press gets bored and they really stop paying attention to Dorothy. And this is upsetting to her because she needs them. How else is she going to spread the word to more people? Then she gets another message. On Christmas Eve night, a flying saucer would come at 6 p.m. I don't know what it's going to do, but... Charles had believed in all of Dorothy's predictions with no hesitation. So when Dorothy said they needed to go outside at 6 o'clock on Christmas Eve, he and the other Seekers did what Dorothy said. I'm guessing just to make it look more normal, they decided to go outside and sing Christmas carols.
I was going to say, I know where Christmas carol is. So they're singing a Christmas carol to people at the front of the door, and they're all looking over their shoulders. You guys seem distracted. Just shut up and sing Silent Night.
So they are out there, and they do attract onlookers. Yeah. People start showing up, Eventually, there's like 200 people there.
Wow. They put on one of the best Christmas Carol concerts in the history. Spontaneous completely. Mr. Martin, by the way, still spending all his time at the local bar.
I'm not sure what Mr. Martin is doing. Okay. Someone calls the police, but nothing really comes of it.
For caroling? Uh-huh. You know what? I can see that.
Well, probably a crowd and it's, you know, yeah. I don't know.
200 people.
Yeah. But they keep singing.
Can you imagine this? There's 200 people following them as they go to the next door and knocking the door. 15 people are trying to sing. 200 people behind them. You'd freak out some people in there.
They're just out there singing.
Are you all going to sing carols?
They're not going door to door. I feel like but they should have. Slowly the crowd
I choose to believe they did.
Dwindles. You know, people got to get to grandma's house for Christmas Eve. So this is getting boring. It's just Christmas carols.
Is
so.
This the origin of Red Riding Hood?
Is no. Yeah. So as you might imagine, the spaceship doesn't come on Christmas Eve
that,
either.
This that point, story.
Yeah. At this point, a bunch of the Seekers are disillusioned.
Mm, finally.
The day after Christmas, the police called Dorothy's husband and told him they had a warrant for Dorothy's arrest.
Wow.
Not exactly sure what the charges were going to be, but Dorothy was a little bit concerned. She was actually afraid that she was going to be committed to a mental institution.
You think?
Yeah.
Probably not
unfounded
fear.
Fear, yeah. So the group was disbanded and Dorothy went to Arizona.
Wow. With or without Mr. Martin?
Nobody knows.
Huh. Well, someone knows.
Not sure.
Mr. Martin knows.
Yeah. Well,
I my suspicion is without. What do you think?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but also, I don't know what her source of income was without Mr. Martin.
Maybe she said, maybe she went to a sanitarium, they called them at the time. Not like a, you know what I mean? A place to dry out TB. They had to do something. I don't know.
I don't think so.
A dude ranch, I want to think.
Charles wasn't so ready and willing to give up yet. He kept speaking about the Guardians at UFO conventions. I don't know what he was doing for income. Now,
yeah, that's right,
because he got fired. Well, he's still a doctor. Yeah, he could still have been doing something. Dorothy never gave up on her beliefs. I'm assuming that she and Mr. Martin parted ways.
I think so.
At some point.
Yeah.
She spent some time living in Peru, but eventually came back to the United States and lived in Sedona, Arizona. Oh. A good place for her, I think.
I think so.
She changed her name to Sister Thedra.
Sister Thedra, another great 1950s space name.
And published several books about her beliefs.
Okay.
I didn't look them up, but
you
maybe I will.
You can find them in many Sedona bookstores.
I know. I'm sure. Not sure if they're still under the name day. Of Dorothy Martin or
was
Sister
Sedona
Thedra.
Already kind of this new agey place, but, or did she kind of help found that? Or
I don't know.
It very much has that reputation nowadays.
I'm assuming it probably already was.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Dorothy's little cult of Seekers led to other UFO cults, like one called Fiat Lux in Europe, and as I alluded to earlier, Heaven's Gate in the United States.
Wait, it led directly to Heaven's Gate? You know, not.
No. I mean, she was the first UFO religion.
Where's the one in Europe you said?
It's called Fiat Lux.
Okay. Yeah. There's a cult in Europe that did horrific things in the 60s and 70s that had, I don't think they had, you wouldn't call them a UFO cult, but they had not dissimilar to that. I mean, there's been a lot of, I wonder, was she the first person who said an alien said this to me? I don't, you're sure of that?
They said it was the first UFO religion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
If there, I don't know, I'd have to do some research, but I feel like there might have been some folks right around that time, or not sure, before that said, you know, I got my special knowledge from an alien.
Yeah. It seemed pretty harmless.
So, certainly, for sure, one of the first, at the very least.
Yeah.
Seems harmless until...
I know. It spawns.
People buy plastic bags.
Yes.
And go to Marie Callender's.
Well, we talked about Leon Festinger and his little group of researchers.
That's actually how I know about this case. The other way, the other direction. Through Festinger.
Right. He's from the University of Minnesota, and he and his group of researchers were fascinated by the Seekers, and their observations of the group led to what we talked about, a major psychological breakthrough, considered a landmark breakthrough of the 20th century and led to the coining of the term cognitive dissonance, mm-hmm. which we've all heard of. Dr. Fessinger thought that when someone is confronted with something in direct opposition to their beliefs, they become psychologically uncomfortable.
Yeah. So in this case, she's telling people the world's going to end, mm-hmm. and they don't want to believe that. So they have to figure a way for that to, for that internal discord to be synced up.
Is it that, or is it that they believe the world is going to end, and when it doesn't?
Oh, you're right. Well, it depends. I guess it could be both. But yeah, in this case, you're right. They have come to believe that the world is going to end. Uh-huh. If it doesn't end, they've got to figure a way to sync that up.
Yeah,
it could be,
and either, they believe that she is a messenger for, you know, this alien Jesus.
So that's why you, when they say, okay, just a test, they're still there. And it happens again. They're still there. William Miller, who founded the precursor of the Seventh-day Adventist, is still a very large Christian denomination to this day.
Yeah.
He had at least three that I'm aware of, at least three end of times people literally went up on the hill, be ready to take it up. And it didn't happen. And he just kept pushing it forward. And then they kind of splintered. But like I said, they grew from there, someone who was for sure wrong.
Yeah.
So that's huge cognitive dissonance. They figure out a way to make that wrong be right.
And one of those ways is doubling down on their beliefs. Yeah. And one of the things is like safety in numbers, right?
Yeah.
I can't be wrong if a whole bunch of people think just like me, right? We can't all be wrong.
It literally explains everything that's happening right now in politics.
And we're going to talk about
that. It
really does. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it's fundamental to what's happening to our country right now.
Uh-huh. So the cognitive dissonance makes them become psychologically uncomfortable. So they have to do something in their mind primarily to alleviate that uncomfortable feeling. So they'll behave in ways that are contrary to their beliefs, or they'll twist the information they've received to fit their established narrative. And they didn't show up, that it was a test.
Option B is the favored way today, is that the information you're giving me that contradicts what I believe to be true
is wrong.
It has to be a lie.
Yep. So in January 1956, the researchers from the University of Minnesota published their findings in a book called When Prophecy Fails. They told the story of Dorothy and her group. They used fake names for everybody. And they put forth their theory to explain their beliefs and behaviors. The next year, Leon Festinger published a book. And in this book, it's called The Theory of Cognitive Dissonance. And this is where he uses the term. I don't think he used it actually in that first book.
Okay.
But he used it the next year. According to Festinger, the seekers resolve the intense conflict between reality and prophecy by what I said before, seeking safety in numbers. Mm-hmm. The whole thing, if more people can be persuaded, then obviously if they can be persuaded it's correct, then it's correct.
And that's why Charles kept proselytizing after the fact. It's interesting though that the person who started the whole damn thing
wasn't doing that.
I'm going back to Arizona
until the very end. Well, before she moved to Arizona, until the last prophecy failed.
Yeah.
Then she decided, okay, now we really got to get the news out. And it was kind of too late. Nobody cared anymore.
Okay.
So, and I mean, she probably would have stayed and kept going if she wasn't afraid of being institutionalized or arrested, right?
Yeah, probably. Maybe.
So, like we said, this When Prophecy Fails has become a landmark in the history of psychology. But actually, a lot of other studies were looking into the same question. What happens when a small, dedicated group of people are waiting for the end of the world? Because it was happening. I guess it was not an uncommon thing. And
it happened enough that they were seeking out a group to study that was doing exactly that. So it wasn't.
Yeah. Unique. Well, and Festinger's, what he was looking into was when the prophecy fails, right? Mm-hmm. That was literally the title of his book.
Yeah.
But one thing he didn't take into account was that prophecies really almost never fail because they just twist their belief system.
But if you're a rational person, yes, the prophecy for sure failed. Her prophecy failed three different times. Twisting to believe doesn't mean the prophecy didn't fail. That's sort of letting them have their cake and eat it too. The prophecy failed. He wants to. So when, you know, when prophecies don't turn out to be true, what do you do? What happens? What's going on inside your brain to make to keep those things in sync? Because remember, what we've not talked about here is the alternative, the rational alternative is to say, okay, it was all bullshit. I was wrong. I'll move on. People don't want to believe that you're wrong about something that you were so passionate about. That's hard. So it's easier psychologically to, like you said, double down, believe everything's a lie, and twist the truth into the prophecy never having failed in the first place.
Well, and because usually the rest of us, we don't believe the world is going to end, right? Mm-hmm. So we see this happening and we see that these claims are inaccurate, right? Yeah. They're not, they don't happen. They're not true.
Yeah.
But so we do see it as a failure, but people who are already in the group and they do believe it and they accept the whole thing, mm-hmm. when there's like a minor little hiccup mm-hmm. or information doesn't match up or whatever, they're not as troubled by it. Yeah. You know, from the outside looking in, how can this not challenge your beliefs?
Oh, yeah.
But they're not seeing it the same way. It's a minor issue to them. A few people might abandon these groups, and typically those are the newer members or the least committed members. But most of them tend to experience very little cognitive dissonance, and they only have to make what seem like little minor adjustments to their beliefs. They keep going, and often they do double down, and they feel more strongly about it and better about it.
Yeah. Sometimes, as a result, the more powerful the evidence, like today with modern cognitive dissonance, again, let's say political, where my beliefs are X, Y, and Z. Well, here's irrefutable evidence that X, Y, and Z aren't true. It's very easy. They're immediately dismissive. But the more I've read this somewhere, that the more powerful those counter arguments are, the more passionate they become about, you know, their, because that in some part of their psyche understands, okay, yeah, what I believe is probably bullshit. So you have to really convince mm-hmm. yourself. You have to really dig deep to protect your psyche.
Yeah. So, I mean, the people who are faithful to these kinds of, I don't want to call it delusions, but, mm-hmm. you know.
Let's be honest.
It is delusional. But today, they could just as easily be the people that stubbornly stand by disgraced politicians.
Or preposterous conspiracy theories, you know, Pizzagate, things like that. Failed, QAnon, that kind of nonsense.
Or even more mundane, failed ideologies, dishonest friends, cheating spouses. Yeah. You know,
so cognitive dissonance does have this. I think of it in politics because that's the approach I came to it. I came through grad school and studying social psychology. But you're right. It actually has all kinds of ramifications, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Like you said, those women who stand by their abusive husband mm-hmm. are convinced.
Or just cheating husband. Or
the mother who's you know, whose son took part in a riot and hurt someone or killed someone. Oh, no, they're a good boy. They just, you know, whatever. That's a form of cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was one article that I read where basically they used the whole thing about the seekers as to say, this is what's going on today. And they did name Donald Trump and they did say that,
no,
you know, this is exactly, I mean, we've talked about it. It's very
cult
like.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you have all the major symptoms and characteristics of a cult within the mag. I'm not trying to pick on one religion. I'm sure there's been culty Mao and, you know, communism in China and places like that. We're very much gave those same kind of, you know, any kind of cult of personality is literally a cult. So don't deny that.
Jim Jones started very
liberal,
left and liberal, and
ultra liberal San Francisco, you know, feed the poor kind of a guy.
Yeah. I was going to say, and I think honestly wanting to do good things,
but was also insane.
Yeah. So, I found this very interesting. There was a Georgetown study, and I didn't know where to stick it in here, but there was a Georgetown study from 2020 that shows a connection between people who had strong pattern recognition. Because you know how our brains look for patterns in mm-hmm. everything? It's just a natural thing that happens. Mm-hmm. But people who have strong pattern recognition are more likely to have passionate religious beliefs.
That's interesting.
I'm not sure I understand
the connection there.
Well, they see events as being part of God's or some other higher being's plan and not just random, unpredictable occurrences.
I imagine conspiracy theorists do as well.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole M-night thing. There's no such thing as a coincidence. Coincidences are all around us every day.
Yep.
But trying to make it the world fit a pattern that isn't really there
makes you
more likely to believe in a kind of extreme things. I mean, not just religion, period, everything, but like hyper-religiosity or no?
Passionate. It said passionate religious
beliefs. Okay, well, that makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, because our brains want to find patterns in the things around us. And because God's of that, we might end up creating meaning out of disconnected things.
For sure.
So...
We do. That's another thing that has really proliferated in the modern time. We're doing that more and more and more. A lot of times, you know, you go back, I know we've picked on it before, but because you have such means of mass communication, unlike we've ever had in the past through YouTube and things like that, that it's easy to spread that kind of thing much more quickly, more thoroughly than it ever has been in the past. So we have lots of people who don't. I mean, it's almost like if you do believe in coincidences, you're an idiot, you're a fool, you're a sheep. That's kind of the attitude of a lot of those folks.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the reality is literally the opposite. But
and because of, like you said, social media and YouTube and even the regular media.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Our brains don't have to do all the work ourselves.
Yeah, it's
being fed to us. Somebody is already making
asking questions, people. And you have the people with the person who used to put the colored threads from thing to thing was the crazy person. Now they're mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it used to be if you see it on the news, it's true. If you see it on TV, it's true. If you see it on the internet, it's true. Yeah. That's now
literally
nothing can be
anything. I mean, I hate to say anything you get by social media on the internet or on cable TV. Mm-hmm. Not only is it possibly not true, it's almost certainly not true. Their job. None of those people see their job as telling the truth. They see the job as making money.
Yeah.
And which is
sad.
It's horrible. Like you think about like news, the olden days, the media, they really did. They wanted to get it right. Think about all cable channels now. I'm not talking about news channels, but cable channels, you know, like Discovery and the stuff they put on Ancient Aliens and shit like that.
Yeah.
They know full well the stuff they're spewing is 100% not true. It's completely been debunked, et cetera. That's not the point. That's not their question. That's not what they care about. They're not like a media source that says, "Ooh, did we get this right?" It's like, "Ooh, what's our viewership? How much money do we make?"
Yeah. Well, apparently, if you're a man and you vote for a woman, you're going to turn into a woman, according to Fox News.
Turn into a woman?
Yeah.
Oh.
So
I did not know that.
Scientists.
I'm worried now.
Scientists have said this.
Well, scientists. Well, see.
I believe it was Jesse Waters on Fox News that said that.
He knows science, so.
But so, if you believe everything you hear on a podcast. Yeah. I'm here to tell you that's not true.
Phew, you just saved a lot of people some cognitive dissonance there, Carrie, and I was worried. Well, cognitive dissonance is a core. It's funny. It was invented formalized in the 50s. It's obviously been with us forever.
Yeah.
But it's formalized in the 50s and was always a really important thing. It's never been more important than it is now. So, I mean, Leon is more famous today than he was in the 1950s. I imagine, I don't know how many people know of Leon Festinger, but.
Nobody. I had never heard of him before this.
Okay. Why?
I mean, I might have read something back in the day in a psychology class or something like that, but.
I think I read.
Didn't stick in my
I didn't
brain.
Read. I read the second one, or at least portions of it. The
theory of cognitive dissonance. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carrie.
Well, you're welcome.
For your interesting story. That was not just crazy psychology.
No.
But about a doomsday cult that was talking to people from Venus.
And nobody died.
And no one died.
Which
that
is
we know of.
Kind of my thing.
That is the kind of thing. No one dies.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening.